Welcome to The Local Point. My name is Andrew Day and I'm the leader of Warwick District Council. This is an informal, behind-the-scenes conversation with people who are shaping the policies and programs, touching lives right across Warwick District and thrashing through some of the real issues we're working on at the moment across the district. It's another month and it's a Friday, hooray, and I have a beer in hand already. Leanne, you're going to have to sort me out one day and stop me having beers on Friday afternoon.
I can help you with that.
But look, welcome back to the Local Point. It's a great opportunity for us to have a chat with really two very important organisations in Leamington Spa and beyond, and I'm delighted to have with us today Leanne Kirkman, the Chief Executive of Helping Hands. Welcome, Leanne.
Thank you for having me.
Good to get your diary lined up, brilliant. And Martin Smith, the General Manager of Action 21.
Good afternoon, pleasure to be here.
Now, neither of you had to come very far to get here, did you?
Not at all, no.
No.
Hardly worth getting on the bicycle to come down here.
And we're back at 1 Mill Street and things are already starting to buzz up for a Friday evening, which is brilliant. But you guys are near neighbours, aren't you? I mean, basically, round the street?
A road apart.
Road apart?
We are, and I don't know if we've ever actually properly met.
No, I don't
but,
think we have.
But the two organisations, we do get our customers, we share the customers, and we get talked about in your place, and you get talked about
so
in
it
your
happened
place.
Here, the
we
meeting.
We refer people.
At the local point, the connection was made.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, brilliant. Good to have you both. Thanks for giving up some of your time to have a chat about what you're doing around the kitchen table, as we do. As I say, it's just an informal chance for us to get to know a bit more about your work and what you're doing in Leamington Spa. But also, I think there's some exciting opportunities for both of your organisations and how we go forward with the vision for our community. But I'm going to pick on Martin first, so you can rest easy for a moment, Leanne. Now, Martin, you took me round. I had a fabulous visit to your setup and I met some really interesting people. I love the guys who are out there, you know, cutting the cables off kettles and grabbing everything. And some of your clients as well. The guy who was buying DVDs to take away.
We have some terrific, fantastic, enthusiastic volunteers.
Yeah.
Who, as you were saying, they do things that other people wouldn't do, and they love dismantling things. You can either call it dismantling things or smashing things up.
Okay.
But they will take electrical stuff and they will separate the plastic from the metal, and then they will separate the different metals out. And it's all money. Everything is money. If it's not saving money of going into landfill,
yeah,
it's actually making money of weighing in scrap.
Yeah.
And they thoroughly enjoy their job. They're very passionate about
it. They certainly are. Now, just take us back a bit, because I first came across Action 21 at what I know as the TIP, but it's a household waste recycling centre, obviously in Princess Drive. You guys were there. I used to, you know, take my kids' old bikes down there, and you'd gladly take them off me. So what happened, and where are you now, and what's your setup?
That was where it all started. We still do get referred to as the TIP shop.
Okay.
Because it was before my time, but there was some sort of collaboration between the district council and Action 21, which at that time was known as Agenda 21.
Oh, yes.
It was all to do with the Rio de Janeiro.
Yes.
First COP.
Yeah.
And the outcome of that COP was to raise awareness of environmental issues in the local community, and some very good thinking people back then decided to form an organisation, which was the beginnings of Action 21. It was linked in with the council, and one of the operations that was running then was the stuff that has now developed into the recycling shop at the TIP. Action 21 took over that.
Okay.
That was where it began. We've moved away.
You moved away, you're now down off Clement Street, aren't you?
We're on Court Street.
Court Street,
yeah. We came there via Ramsey Road in Sydenham,
yeah,
and now we have got what we think is perfect location because it's near to the town, gets a lot of people walking past. People make daily visits there, if not twice daily, because they'll come in on the way downtown, they'll come in on the way back from town.
But that's kind of interesting, because one of the things that struck me, yes, you've got this big environmental agenda and the reuse message is, you know, it's clearly being practiced, but you're a bit of a community centre as well. I mean, you get guys, I remember you telling me they'd come at 8:30 in the morning, and if you don't have work for them, they're kind of, they're wanting to be put to business.
Well, again, there are two sides to this. There is the volunteer side, and there really is a community of volunteers who all will support each other. They all enjoy working with each other, and they do a terrific job. There also is the community of customers who come in for a chat. I'm sure a lot of our customers, I will mention at this early stage as well, the music.
Yes.
We have a reputation for the music that is played in the shop. And some people, I think, come in to get out of the rain, listen to the music, see who's there, have a chat. If we had enough space, we would have a coffee shop.
Yep.
Unfortunately, we don't have enough space to do that.
Yep.
That is one of our ambitions for the future.
I'm going to talk more about that because we've got some ideas coming forward that we could maybe work together there. Brilliant. Let me just turn to Leanne now and get a bit of a sense of your near neighbour. And I'm glad to make some introductions between you both today.
Yeah.
Now, Leanne, Helping Hands.
Yeah.
It was, and that was Stefan Jeffs, I think. And I remember that all starting in the soup kitchen, the mobile soup kitchen.
Yeah.
So where did it change and when did you get involved? I mean, how did it all
so
develop?
They, I mean, Stefan Jeff, Lemon to Christian Mission, is the, what everyone knows it as Stefan Jeff.
Yeah.
We're running the Lemon to Christian Mission for 25 years, I think. One of the first outreaches, I know Salvation Army existed, but they were one of the first literally going out and helping the homeless in Leamington.
Yeah.
And then they retired in 2014.
Yeah.
But I was already one of their volunteers.
Uh-huh.
But I was one of their volunteers because I was actually somebody they helped and
yeah.
supported us. So me and my husband were recipients of their care and their support. So when they finished, me and my husband were just, well, and a lot of people were devastated because they were providing such an amazing service. They were out 7 nights a week at one point, and then I think as the time went on, they reduced their services. But it was obvious there was still a need for what they did. And then they had, I don't know if you ever knew the warehouse they had on the same road.
They
actually
were next door to us.
Absolutely.
Now you mentioned their names, I remember them.
Yeah.
I remember them closing down.
Absolutely,
yeah.
on
yeah.
Soane's estate, on the Soane's. Yeah. And they gave all their items from their storage to a lady in Kenilworth who was started to help local families. And I just contacted them and said, that lady, and said, can I help you? Because they're retiring. And she said, never mind, help me. Do you want the key to the shed that they've put all their stuff in? I'm off to America with my husband. Here's the key. Here's £250 that my husband's done a mud run or whatever it was. See what you can do with it.
Yeah.
So
we
did. We saw what we could do with it. And we registered a charity. £250.
So it's you and Paddy together.
Me and
you,
Paddy,
yeah.
and a couple of Steph and Jeff's old volunteers.
Okay.
Actually, that's how it started.
Brilliant.
Was a few of us that just said, you know, we can't make
so
this stop.
Can't.
I mean, I had received their support, so I knew how important it was. So I did not want it. I would have done it by myself, Andrew. I was determined to do this this thing because it was so important to me and to other people. I think there was a lot of work they did that was hidden. So yeah, that's how it started.
And you're now, obviously, various moves, etc., but you've got your setup is on Althorpe Street. Do you want to tell us about what you've got there and what's happening? What's the size of...
I mean, we started on the streets, literally on the streets with £250, and then managed to get a shop, which is on Gloucester Street.
Yeah.
And that came out of an event we did just in the first year in Dare to Do and raised £18,000 on that first night.
Wow.
So we raised money to get a shop, and for us, our shop's a bit like you, it's got purpose behind it. It's about getting people off the streets and giving them a purpose, our shop. But so we started in Gloucester Street. We had our shop there, our storage there, and our offices there. People taking showers there. It was a crazy little place. And then we managed to find, during, actually, January 2020, we secured Althorpe Street. And then obviously, as we all know, March 2020 hit the world. Mm. And we didn't move in until August 2020. So...
Yeah.
So we're now in Althorpe Street, where it's a much bigger property. We can run more support groups. We've got our offices there. We have all sorts of things going on down there.
So it's a lot more than soup and a bun for people that, you know, are rough sleeping. And talk to me about what happens. You describe people you look after as clients, as I understand it. And,
yeah,
and
I don't like that term. It's a horrible term. It's horrible really hard to know how to...
Yeah. What is the right word?
Service users, clients, you know, it's difficult, isn't it? Because it's, you know what, it's Andrew, we support anybody.
Yeah.
I don't care whether you're a CEO or a rough sleeper on the streets, we Helping Hands can support you because... Yeah. We're predominantly known as a homeless charity, but we support people with the causes and the effects of homelessness. So that is mental health.
Yes.
That's domestic abuse. That's marital breakdown. You know, like that is, it's issues that affect the whole community. So we are known as a homeless charity and people have an idea of rough sleeping, but there's so much more. It's so much more. And the people that we support, I'm not going to name names, but there's a guy there that was, I don't know, there's an ex-vet who needed something to do with his spare time. There's a guy that got an autistic diagnosis late in life and it just knocked his confidence. So he came and got involved with us and he's just left this week because he's got a job again and he just thanked us for rebuilding his confidence. So, you know what, we're not just a homeless charity. We're there to rebuild.
So it's about picking up and repurposing in a way. It sounds a bit familiar, doesn't it, with Action 21?
I think where the similarities are, a few years ago, the men's shed became a very topical thing. Yeah. And Action 21 actually discussed at one of the board meetings whether we should instigate some sort of local men's shed. Then we realised that we've already got two or three.
Yeah.
We've got the bicycle workshop, which is very definitely a men's shed. We've got the electrical testing, the PAT workshop, which is another men's shed.
Yeah.
And then we've got the two that we mentioned earlier on who are separating metals. And that definitely is another men's shed.
So
we have already got.
Yeah.
And that is why these people, they build their own community and they bring their friends along. And something that we've very much got, which has recently developed, it actually developed during the COVID time, was a sort of, it's not a WhatsApp group, it's a messenger group with the volunteers who wanted to keep in touch. Mm. And it was only the other day, one of our volunteers heard about this messenger group that we were talking to each other on. They said, "What's this? Why don't I know about this?" So the next thing you know, they're on there as well, and it's growing sort of by request. People have to hear about it, but they've got their own little community.
It's because it's connection. People need connection, and I think that's what we saw. That's what the problem is with COVID. We all lost our connection, and we have the same. We have some, all our support groups have their own WhatsApps, and people need social connection, and
through COVID, both organisations still managed to keep connected with the people you're caring for and looking after, your communities, if you like. But it's also, you provide a connection to engage sort of the service side of things. I know from the council perspective, it's never perfect. I appreciate that. But when we're trying to get people, you know, into housing, Helping Hands enables that connection with council housing and services.
Yeah.
But also you do a thing called, help me here, it's moving for
house
to home. That's right.
Yeah.
And just, can you want to, because I think there's kind of crossovers going on here.
Oh, my head's already connected. talk afterwards.
I've got it. So talk to me about that service. What's involved there?
House to home, everything we do at Helping Hands is about a hand up, not a hand out. So let me just...
A hand up, not a hand out.
Yeah, so even
I
the
love
soup
it.
Kitchen,
love it.
The house to home project, people think that we're just giving stuff out, but actually there's a hand up side to it where we are, a bit like you, taking some of our clients and taking them out to help support. So just to rewind a little bit, house to home is where people get moved from the streets or from maybe a domestic abuse situation into the area. They get given a council property and usually it's an empty shell. So when I say empty shell, I mean no carpets, no curtains, no light bulbs,
completely.
No curtain
nothing.
Rails.
Yeah.
And it's a real problem. Mm. And obviously if you come off the streets or domestic abuse situation, you've got nothing and also might not have the funds or, you know, the ability to furnish your property. So that's what we do.
Right.
But that's almost like a start of a relationship for us. That's when we, a bit like our soup kitchen, that's step one of let's get to know and ask why you're in this situation and how can we help you get out of it. So,
and is it also a way, with the people that come to you and helping, I love that, not a handout, it's a hand up, it's getting them connected again. I mean, to have what service, what they're entitled to, really. So often people aren't aware of the sort of, you know, the benefits program that's out there, all the services, or even some of the healthcare. I believe you get, you know, the NHS coming in and helping, and that was part of your background too, isn't it? Of course,
I'm still a registered nurse, just
there,
in case.
Yeah, there you go, just in case.
We'll
remember that, won't we, Martin? Just
useful to know.
Useful to know.
You never know. I'm on call.
Okay.
So I mean, we at Happy Hands, we look at the whole person, but we can't do it all by ourselves. So we connect with the housing would refer into us for house to home support.
Okay.
And then we get to know the client. Then we offer counselling, and then, as you say, the council nurses come in, funded by the council, and we'll do healthcare with them. We work with P3, who's Brilliant. Another homeless charity, and they'll do all their benefits, and they do all the, you know, trying to get them back into the right house and support. So we definitely work.
You're sort of like a forum or a crossroads where that's all possible to get that connection.
Yeah, definitely.
Happening.
Yeah.
And you're just, I know you're both charities, but how do you on earth fund all of that? You've got a group of volunteers.
That's what I was going to ask.
How do you do it? Have you got a property to run? You've got to find all this food. You've got to. Where does that all come from?
I know. So we started with £250.
Yeah.
The first year we raised 18,000. I remember, you know, I still remember the first time we hit 20,000, and I was gobsmacked. I can be honest with you, we didn't even tap into grant funding until 2020.
Wow.
So that was year five for us. We didn't even look at grant funding because we have been able to get the most amazing stuff. We weren't getting council funding.
No.
You know, I can count on our hands how much council funding we've
had. Yeah. Okay,
and that's
okay.
Not disrespectful at all.
No, go for
and
it.
Actually, we've not had to because the community have supported us.
Yeah.
One of our... we are passionate about local businesses getting involved.
Okay. So how do they get involved? If I, you know, I'm the local whatever,
A
solicitor's firm or a building company. I mean, how do I get involved with helping?
Most businesses have a CSR strategy,
they do.
A social responsibility, and often people just get in touch with us. I mean, the first business that got in touch with us was Greg's. In year one, Greg's food, just came and said, we've got loads of sausage rolls available. So literally within weeks, we had Greg's, and they've been with us for 7 years.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Isn't that amazing? That's really good.
7 years they've been supporting us, Greg's, from literally the first few weeks of us starting out on the streets. They approached us.
Right.
So there's a bit of them approaching us. There's a bit of me also approaching them and going out and finding them, really, because... we think that we can help businesses as well as businesses helping us.
I'm sure
and
you
so
can.
We build relationship with businesses on purpose.
Okay.
We actively on purpose want to build a relationship with people because, Andrew, I went to one big business, I'm not going to name, but I went and did a little talk. At the end of the talk, one lady came up and said, my husband's just left me. Another said, I'm in a domestic abuse situation right now. Oh. Another one said,
oh gosh,
I've got mental health issues, my boss doesn't know.
Yeah.
You know, within our teams, within every business in this community,
we've got the issues that
would lead to homelessness. So.
Yeah.
It's about preventative care and support for local businesses
And getting the businesses more involved. How to do that? Okay, I'm sure you take money, you take sausage rolls, I understand, that's great too. But what else do businesses do? How do they engage with
you? We don't ask for money first.
No.
I don't believe in asking for money straight off from business. It's not about that for me. Because, do you know, if we build a relationship and they see the impact we're making, and actually we start making impact on them as well in their business, they'll want to give money.
Yeah,
you know,
it's a
relationship, and I think that's what we've found over the years is that we've naturally built relationships with local businesses, and I think they see the tangible thing that we're doing. So we offer, the first thing we say is come and do a soup kitchen with us, and we have a soup kitchen takeover. We also have a house to home takeover.
So hang on, soup kitchen takeover. So I guess you do your shifts each night.
Yeah.
I'm assuming. So what, the guys from the local, you know, a solicitor's firm come in and they run that soup kitchen, do they?
So we've worked out, I mean, it sounds a horrendous, amazing amount, but £200 a night costs us to run our soup kitchen. And that's taken into account our electricity, our lighting, our...
Sure.
our pet force that come and check we haven't got rats. You know, it's taking into account all of that. So if we had 50 people at Soup Kitchen, it's costing us £200 a night to run.
Wow.
So we do say to people, this is how much it's costing us. But if you bought the meal for us for tonight, that's cutting out of a lot of our costs. Mm. I mean, we do get a lot of donated food as well. But if you can help us cut down those costs. So we ask them to buy the food, prep the food, cook the food and serve the food. So it's a really great team building exercise for people. Fantastic.
They get a lot out of that.
They get so much out of it. It's good fun.
Yeah.
It's good fun, but also with a really serious message behind it. So we've had, you know, are we allowed to mention the WASP players?
Yes, of course you can,
We've had loads of local, Cala Gas are fantastic. They come and bring all their...
They're great,
They bring so much stuff with them. And it's just a really good, and they come again and again. You know, what we find is they've been once and they're saying, well, can we sign up to do this once a month? And the impact of it... We had a big business bring some of their senior managers from out of town. They came, and then a guy that lives out of town brought his team. And I said, why are you coming back?
Because back here.
You're not local.
Yeah.
And he just said, because I felt the difference. I went home with a smile on my face, and I felt the impact, and I wanted my team to feel that impact.
Isn't that interesting?
That is, you know...
It's something about the joy of giving, you know, it really is
there.
It
feels good to do good.
It really does. It really does.
It really does, yeah.
You must see a bit of that, don't you?
Well, it's fascinating because it's an entirely different business model to the one that Action 21 has got, because we are completely self-funding.
Yeah.
All our expenses are paid from people buying stuff from the shop.
And those guys, the guys that recover the metal, were really proud of the fact that, £2,000 worth of stripped metal out of...
That was what the scrap man gave us for what they had recovered.
And they're on a mission to do better than that. They are on a record-breaking whatever. It was commitment.
It's interesting as well. You're talking about these, I'd call them corporate volunteers that come along. We get offered corporate volunteers, and it's very unusual for me to take them up on their offers because we haven't really got anything for them to do. After good long-term volunteers who will turn up, you know, two or three half days a week, and we can rely on them to stay with us for a while. Half a dozen people coming up for a corporate responsibility thing to come to Action 21, we wouldn't know what to do with them because you can't just in an afternoon check. You've got something you can give them to do.
We actually invite them to our warehouse as well. So we have a warehouse takeover day as well as a Soup Kitchen takeover day. So they come in.
They do stuff in the warehouse, sorting.
So I'm using Cala Gas just because they were the first to do it. But they came. So we have what we call bathroom packs, kitchen packs, bedroom packs. So when they go out and do this, But we often, they're either donated items or we buy the items. So we said to Cala, look, it costs £100 for a kitchen pack with brand new stuff in. How many boxes would you like to? Because they want to see what you're spending their money on. Yeah. So how many boxes can that buy? So they went out and bought all the, it's a bit like the Soup Kitchen, went and bought all the stuff. They came in and packed the stuff, and then they were able to deliver the stuff. So they're seeing from the minute, they're seeing the impact they're having.
See, again, it's, even though both of our organisations seem to be on a similar sort of mission with helping people, one of the primary aims of Action 21 is the diversion from landfill and saving from landfill.
What's your tonnage? What are you were telling me?
Do something like 120 tons.
You save from going into landfill?
Save from landfill.
Forever?
Each year.
That's amazing.
That's a staggering amount.
That's something which, as such, we have to do. So we have to have this conveyor belt operation of people dropping stuff off at the back door. Sort it, price it, we display it in the shop, and we sell it out the front door.
Yeah.
And what we get for it out the front door is dependent on what comes in the back. So it's all got to balance out.
But you're also changing minds. I wish I could remember the lady's name. It was before half term that I visited, and she was sorting through, I recall, all the games, the board games and so forth, to ready, because generally families came in, and grandparents in particular, to find the old and favourite board games that they used to play, because they're now taking care of the grandkids over half term, and she was there. And I said, how did you come to get involved in all of this? And she said she was involved in the people's inquiry for the climate emergency that we ran, and she was recruited specifically as a climate skeptic. You know, didn't believe in any climate change. It was all rubbish as far as she was concerned. And she was so convinced because of the people's inquiry, she had to do something. And she recognised that reuse is one of the areas we're not performing well enough. Mm. We're getting better at recycling, but reuse. And so she's one of your volunteers.
She's a very good volunteer. I know exactly who you're talking about. Believe it or not, she even takes home jigsaw puzzles and counts the pieces to make sure that she can stick a label on it and say this is complete.
But they're beautiful games. I mean, they really are. I mean, anyway, what I'm getting at is that the mission is somewhat different. You're getting to the corporate mindset
and
changing
that. Well, we've got a shop as well. We've got a charity shop.
Gotcha.
So we have got the charity shop. So we get the puzzles as well.
Oh, you get that as well.
the difference that Action 21 has got with other charity shops is we're not trying to raise money to feed starving children or look after people in hospices or anything like that. We are just trying to raise enough money to cover our own costs.
Yeah.
Once we've covered our costs, we will sell it as cheaply as possible or virtually give it away.
Yeah.
And one thing that we are finding, we're a beneficiary of the cost of living crisis because people are shopping more. Mm. I think particularly in our shop, because our prices have never gone up. Mm. Everything is as cheaply as we can as we can make it. And that brings people in to, we get your clients as well, because they will come to us and they will get their crockery, their cutlery, their glasses,
I mean, it's 50p
for
a coat.
Well, we've been...
I've told my wife as well.
We had...
They shouldn't be coming to you because we give it for free.
competition now. Competition, I love it.
For our clients, they get it.
It's important because you've got a big don't landfill it, let's reuse it.
That's
message.
Correct.
You've also got an overarching wish to keep people warm. But then again, that complements exactly where you're at as well. So I can see the synergies here.
So things are changing constantly as well. We had a glut of clothes. Mm. And when we've got more clothes than we can sell, and clothes aren't the only item that we get more than we can sell, we have a recycling company that take them off and do other things with them. They might get shipped abroad.
Well. Did you find during COVID you got a lot of people clearing out their cupboards and stuff?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
You got a mountain of stuff.
Yes, we had to slow stuff down at one point. But it was an initiative of one of our volunteers said, why don't we just start putting the clothes on sale at 50p each? Didn't matter what it was, didn't matter whether it was a big overcoat, didn't matter what it was 50p each. And I said, well, try it. That was 3 months ago now.
Yep.
We are still selling clothes at 50p each. We were asked, when are you going to stop? I said, when we run out of clothes.
Yeah.
We're not actually sending anything like the amount for recycling that we used to because they are being bought. And someone was buying some the other day, and I'm always interested if someone's buying a lot. I said, what are you doing with all these clothes? He was buying 50, 100 things at a time, just complete cross-section of everything. He was shipping them out to the Philippines because that was where his roots were.
Okay.
And he said, I send these out there because it's better than sending them money. Because if you send them money, you don't know what they're going to do with it.
Understood.
So he's filling suitcases and shipping them back home to the Philippines.
Interesting.
And it shows that it's worth him buying them at 50p each.
Yeah.
Because you don't know what, as such, when they get over there, they don't know what they've got. They've just got this suitcase full of a complete assortment of different sizes, different everything. That brings people into our shop, and they will then buy other stuff that they see around. But all of it is priced as cheaply as we possibly can because we don't want to make a profit.
Yeah.
At the moment, we are making a bit of a profit, and our trustees are going to have to work out what they're going to do with that profit, because once we fund it ourselves, our mission statement is that we support other local good causes,
Understood.
Local charities.
Yeah. Good
and
one.
You know a good one. Our trustees are going to have to form a process of how they decide what to do with it. We haven't been able to support anything for couple of years now because COVID took all our money away, and we're just building it back up.
And
again.
But we've done it now. And you do need a reserve. You do need something to fall back on. I know you were in a similar place where
last
you had to work.
We fell into our reserves,
big
time.
And many did. But what's interesting is a sort of, if I could describe it as an ecosystem, a social ecosystem that we have in Leamington, which is really self-supporting in a very ad hoc way. I mean, it's quite extraordinary. It's one of the things that really impresses me about this town. It's the living values. You're fascinated, you know, you're into reusing and saving landfill, but also inadvertently, in a sense, providing meaning, purpose, place, community. Is that unfair? Have I got
no, there is all that. And we actually have got two shops in one.
Right.
Because in amongst all the stuff that we do get donated, there is not just the everyday stuff, it's what loosely called vintage stuff, it's collectibles, which are sorted and they're presented in a different way. And we can get a bit more money for them because we're selling to a different market.
Yeah.
At one time we had a separate shop that we were in, but that shop has now been incorporated. And we get quite a lot of collectors, dealers, that kind of people coming in through. Who are different to... We've been talking about the social side of it, the community side of it.
Yeah.
These are people who will buy something from us and they can see that they can make a profit on it.
Gotcha.
We deliberately sell it at a price that has got money for them because there's no point us taking up space sitting on that item.
Yes. Yes.
We want it to go. It's got to keep moving because we've got more coming in all the time.
Mm.
And we have got a reputation usually on a Monday morning. There is a queue at the door when we open the door because they know we can sometimes do a bit of rejigging stuff over the weekend. And on a Monday morning, they're there buying stock for their stores and their craft shops because vintage stuff. Also, the haberdashery. We have an enormous haberdashery section. And being very blunt about how we get this stuff, the generation who are now moving on, downsizing. I'm not going to be really brutal. They're the generation that are the very oldies now. The ladies
I'm getting there. It won't be long.
They all had extensive sewing, crafting.
They did.
All this
they did.
Stuff, and they would have a spare room full of it.
Yeah.
When they're not in that spare room anymore, we get the lot.
But do you get the bloke stuff too, like the model train sets and all those good things? Do you get any of that?
With blokes, we tend to get the contents of their shed or garage.
Oh, yes.
And again, we have various streams of what we do with this.
It's very useful for
particularly I seem to notice the... people who have come, Eastern Europeans, who have come into Leamington recently, they're setting up home. The blokes there are buying power tools, any kind of tools, they're buying all their hardware from what has come out of someone's garage when they don't have it anymore.
Which has probably been brilliantly maintained and got plenty of life left.
Nothing wrong with it at all.
No.
And the very older tools, which are the hand tools, the pre-electrical power tools, we have an arrangement with TWAM, Tools with a Mission, and they take them from us and they send them over to Africa where they don't have the power. So all the hand tools and things, the old brace and
bit, you remember
that?
Yeah.
They will have all those and they all go over to Africa. So we're trying to find a way that things don't all get landfill primarily, but it's like a list of how things go down the list.
Mm.
And if we can't sell it to someone here to use it because it doesn't plug into something...
Yeah.
It will go to Africa, but if it's really broken, no use for Africa, then it will go, the metal will be separated from it, and we'll take it off and we'll get the money from the metal. And we really are trying to absolutely raise revenue from anything. The only thing I think that we don't get revenue from is plastic.
Yeah.
And that's a sad reflection on the way
things are.
Modern ways,
that's so true. Mm. Now, Leanne, you also have branched out somewhat with it, and I know something a little bit about the ESTA project, and you've got some exciting vision there about what you want to achieve. Can you talk to me a bit about the ESTA project? Because I'm not sure many of our listeners would really understand what this is.
So we've got a women's and a men's group now, so we've got the Elijah's Rest and the ESTA project. So we've got two.
That's a great name, the Elijah's Rest.
Very biblical context.
Oh, I like this. Okay, yeah.
Could go into that one, I don't think you want.
Okay.
Yeah, so the ESSA project is something that actually existed before Helping Hands. So
right.
I was a vulnerable adult myself, as a vulnerable female. Could have ended up homeless. A lot of people know my story. I had a mental breakdown. I mean, without sharing all my story, I had issues from late teens, and I just felt the support wasn't there. So I've always had a passion to support women, or late, you know, young women, or old, whatever age, doesn't matter to me. And that often that the support isn't there for people that are female women, the homeless women. And the reason it is there, but there's a lot of hidden female support.
But also predominantly, just I'm going to ask the numpty questions here, but of the homeless community generally, and Rough Sleepers, it's mainly men, isn't it? What's the sort
of that's what you see.
Is that what I see?
To be honest, I've been contacting the council last week just to get some up-to-date figures. And I actually asked for, what can you show me, what are the female figures and what are the male figures? Because what they know is there are a lot of female hidden homeless that we can't get the numbers on.
So what's a hidden homeless?
The hidden homeless is sofa surfers, the ones that are staying at the family or the friends or B&Bs, refuge, you know, the hidden. So you tend to get rough sleepers tend to be males. The women are often, you know, there's a lot of domestic abuse associated with female homelessness, so we're passionate with the ESSA project around females getting gender informed support, so that we're looking at gender issues. So we do support men, and absolutely men deserve every bit of support that they get for reasons such as trauma.
And is that Elijah's Rest?
That's Elijah's Rest.
Okay.
But what we are passionate at Helping Hands is the fact that there isn't any, there's not a lot of gender, female supported services out there, but that refuge are out there, but it's a known fact there's not enough refuges nationwide for women that are struggling with domestic abuse, and actually those that are entrenched with all sorts of issues, it comes down to trauma and it comes down to some kind of form of abuse, and therefore the ladies that you do see on the streets, it's there's, you know, complex issues that are not getting addressed. So we're passionate, Esther, just to
you've got a setup that where you can take people in during the day, but you've got an ambition to go further than that. Do you want to talk to me a little bit about
that? We've got a what we call the Esther room, but the men use it as well.
Okay.
There's a bit of pink in there, but it doesn't matter. You've got a pink shirt on, Andrew.
Yeah.
It's fine, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's fine. But actually, we got money from Calagas are going to love me today, but I mentioned them a few times today.
Yeah.
But Calagas gave us some funding to, I was passionate about having a space that was trauma informed. And what I mean by that is that when you walk into the building, even into the nurse room that we have, that it doesn't feel like a nurse room, that it feels like a safe space to come that doesn't trigger some trauma from childhood or whatever. So we, Calagas, and in conjunction with Mill Street, actually, we created a trauma-informed space for women to come and feel safe and secure. However, there is a need for, as I said, more refuge spaces, or just women that, so you can go, you can leave home because of domestic abuse, but when you start, then the domestic abuse causes mental health issues and drug addiction and all those other things. It's a different level of support you're looking for.
And there's children sometimes
and children
too,
as well. Yeah,
so
and it's the women and the children that have to leave, which is sad, isn't it? It should be the perpetrator that leaves, but actually it's the women that have to up sticks and you know, it's we cause more trauma through that. You know, we're having them to get them to leave. So we've got a real desire to open a trauma informed house accommodation, preferably a little bit rural, somewhere safe and and feels like a nice retreat type space where we can really work with women to address some of those trauma issues and get them back on the feet.
That space would be like a safety net. They could live there for a period.
Yeah.
Get all the support and services that they need to get their lives back on, and then they're stepping back into the normal sort of social support networks and council housing, etc., to get going.
Yeah.
But we don't have anything like that around here, do we?
I mean, like I say, you have refuges.
Yeah.
But it's when you've got it's when you've, you know, trauma on top of trauma on top of trauma. So you've got the, you know, drug and alcohol and mental health addiction, and people just need to get away from it all. And actually, I don't think there is anywhere locally that does that, where you can actually go and get well.
Yeah.
And it's about getting well.
You don't stop, do you, Leanne? No. It's like, you know.
I have a husband, child, children don't. Somewhere.
Yeah, you've got children of your own.
I'm sure I have them somewhere. That makes me sound terrible.
No, I've
got a very supportive family that are in this journey with us, yeah.
No, you're all in it together, I know. Absolutely. I know very much so. But Martin, you've also got plans because, you know, we've talked separately about the fact that, you know, there's a lot going on that, what I call the wobbly triangle, the Clement Street, through all the way down
which
the canal.
Work seems to have started.
So we've got it through planning. This is for the Stoneley Arms, which I love it. When council leader, and I found out, it took me a couple of years to work out that we actually own a pub. But it was closed. I thought, what? What's going on? Don't tell me. We don't own any barbecues, but we own a pub. And I'm thinking, come on, there's got to be something here. But it's pretty dilapidated. So we've managed to repurpose some funding, and we've got it through planning now to take to start the process. And the school behind. And that's just adjacent to your base.
Yes. And Action 21 has ambitions that if we had more space, because we use the space we've got at the moment is fully utilised.
Yeah, sure
if
is.
If we had more space, I've already mentioned a community type cafe would work very well, because both for customers and for the volunteers, they refer to it as their safe place. Mm. It's where they have fun, it's their playground they come to. And to have somewhere where you could serve food and refreshments and stuff would add to that. But also to add other bits to it, because I would love to recycle more timber, and we could have a timber yard there. If we had an outside area, we would be recycling some. Whenever houses are refurbished, we are offered the contents, their bathroom, their kitchen and stuff like that. Yeah. We haven't got the space for it. Yeah. We did in Ramsey Road when we were there, but we don't anymore.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of stuff out there that we're not actually getting at the moment. And if there were more space, we would also like to have learning spaces. We've already run the craft club.
Okay, so to what happens in the craft club? What in your learning?
In the learning spaces, we want to help people upskill.
Okay.
We want to. It's also to have a sort of knit and natter club, which at one time that was what our craft club was about. Now it's become a bit more structured, where it is teaching people how to do certain things. At the moment, they're making snowflakes out of plastic bottles, which are all going to Foundry Woods for their music in the woods, and they're all decorations.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's getting people involved, getting them engaged with things. We want to involve children, teaching them crafts, teaching children to knit and crochet, the old things that don't seem to happen anymore, that aren't connected to a screen and a phone and stuff. Teach them how to use their hands.
It's not just the value of the craft, it's that whole point about mental health, the whole well-being piece that you get out of creating and using those abilities.
It goes back to mentioning men's sheds. Men's sheds is just a model of groups of people who all work together, share their skills, engage with each other.
Yeah.
And that is an ambition that Action 21, if it had the space, it would like to run more and more of a community hub that type. And we are hoping that as things develop in the vicinity of Action 21, that we're kind of on site there to try and help out.
But there are also some, if you like, learnt skills that people learn in their sheds, if you like, that will be lost. There's a lot of different tinkering trades and how you repair or deal with. And I mean, Julie's grandfather used to repurpose vacuum cleaners in his shed, and he'd take on 10 for the local vacuum cleaner dealer, and he'd refurbish them and put them back up for secondhand vacuum cleaners. And well, you know, and he made a few quid, which I think went in the beer pot. But hey, brilliant. But that stops things going to landfill. It also made him feel he was doing something worthwhile. And you know, I just think there's so much opportunity for that sort of thing.
Turning back the clock, because if you turn back the clock to the generation that preceded us, they did make things more durable. They repaired them. They didn't replace them. They repaired them, and they would buy something that they thought would last their lifetime.
Yeah.
Now it's not our fault, but we have got into such a commercial society that things need, you need the next model, the next year, and that's not the way that sustainable society.
Do you think some of that might be around tech? I mean, I just think how many mobile phones go to wherever. Or I know you're looking at me, Martin, like that's the anathema. But all that tech bit, even just fixing, I know it sounds daft, but fixing kettles, I thought was interesting. The fact that you fix old, tape players and things that people have otherwise,
We will fix where we can. That's something that tends to get left to the repair cafe.
Okay.
We don't do so much. But if I just give an example, I could ask you, if you think about what you have got in your home, how many of the mobile phone or other type of transformer charger things that you plug in the wall, how many do you think you might have in the back of a drawer at home?
We call them rubble drawers. They're full of bits and pieces of things we don't want to throw out in case we need them, but we never need them.
I don't have the figures, but it was something that I heard quoted a little while ago on the media about how you've got those, and let's say, for example, you might have 20 if you added them up.
Yeah.
So has your next door neighbour, and so has every house in your street.
It's outrageous, isn't it?
All those are full of precious metals.
Yeah.
All of those have bits that could be reused and recycled. And if we've just thought about your street.
Yeah.
So if you think of your 20 in your house, only 20 houses in the street, and start multiplying it, then you look at what's in Leamington, and then you look at what there is in the West Midlands, in the country, there is hundreds of thousands of tons
of
those old chargers, old phones.
You're on a mission now, I can see.
That are just sitting there.
I know.
Nothing's happening to them at all.
Yeah.
And
what can you do with them? I've got a load. You can help.
What we will do with them is we'll sell the ones we can if anybody needs them. But what we will do with them is we will break them open. We'll take the metal out of them. Okay. And we will recycle the metal.
They got wheelbarrow loads of metal and very proud of it.
We're missing
too.
A trick. Yes. We get all these donations. We definitely should work on
that. We found out initially we would put things like that into a wheelie bin and we would weigh that in at scrap metal and there would be an allowance made for the amount of plastic that was in there.
Mm.
We have found that it's not cost effective, but it seems the right thing to do is to take the plastic off it and just take to the scrap man what is in effect a bin of copper.
Yeah.
And it's easier to see that being melted down and used for something else.
Yeah.
It's not our fault. I come back to this because every time that you get a new phone, you get a new charger with it. If every time you got a new phone with a new charger, they took back your old one and they did something with it. But it is this constant upgrading of stuff.
Agreed.
And it's phenomenal. That is just one example. But what we have got in our homes, if you multiply that by every home.
And you forget about it too. And I quite agree. It's funny though, isn't it, that someone said to me that every toothbrush you've ever owned still exists.
Oh, don't.
I just thought, crikey, that is quite scary for an old boy like me. I'm kind of thinking there's quite a few toothbrushes somewhere under the ground probably. But look, I think the opportunities around this part of Leamington are enormous. It's not about gentrifying the area. It's about enhancing the characteristics that are there, the assets, if you like, our social connections, whether it's through the work that Helping Hands are doing and want to do in extending out your other projects, or in fact how we take the community that you've got there in Action 21 and open that more. I mean, this is a real opportunity for the Stoneleigh Arms.
Something that is very topical, yes, and I think that what the development in the area is something that we need to make sure properly kind of considers what the community has got and builds on it. When there was a suggestion that the building we're currently in was going to be demolished and flats were going to be built there, if you recall, a year or so ago, there was a bit in the media.
Yeah.
People were really worried, not just our volunteers, about where are we going to go and what we're going to do, and we just say it's all right, Action 21, we'll carry on, we'll find somewhere else.
Mm.
Our customers were coming in saying, what's happening? We hear you're being knocked down.
Mm.
And there, put it into perspective, it's probably a few hundred people in total who see Action 21 as part of their community.
Yeah.
And they are stakeholders in it, and they are interested in what happens to it.
Yeah.
And it's looking after what they want going forward with the future, because all of these things will evolve.
Can you imagine if we had to, the government or the council, heaven forbid, had to make an organisation like either of yours? I am absolutely convinced that we would get nowhere near it. And the thing is, I think it's really important to cherish, as a local community and as a local authority, to cherish these things. It's like having a wonderful thing that's growing in your garden that has self-seeded, is self-sustaining, bears fruit, gives shade, you know, cleans the air. I mean, you want to support this.
I think it's just something that is very important to Action 21, and from what you've said, it sounds like you fit into the same category. Because we are not beholden to anybody who is giving us money, we can actually do what we want.
You have independence, hallelujah.
We're not answerable to anybody.
Yeah.
And if we want to do something that's not cost effective, but it fits in with our charitable
your choice,
we can do that.
And that's the difference. I mean, the council have given us money. They have given in the past, but we're not a council funded.
No.
So it means that we can do things within
that institution. That is quite liberating.
I think part of what we've got to do as a council is provide the right environment for you to go on and expand and evolve, because the needs change, and as you've been identifying, and I think post-COVID, things like our mental health and well-being, and whether it's learning to knit or engaging people and being that safety net that you've got there through your...
It's just working together, isn't it?
It's really important.
And I think, interestingly, because we do receive money from the county council, and the money we get from the county council is for diverting from landfill, and every single item that we sell from the shop, we take the weight of it. We'll go into the detail, it's a bit convoluted. We measure the weight of it, and every quarter we tell the council, demonstrate to them how much in weight, not in money, how much in weight has gone out of our shop. And they give us what is known as reuse credits. They give us money because we have saved the council from burying that in the ground.
And paying landfill tax to do that. And I can see the win-win there.
That is where the council, if Action 21 wasn't doing it, they would have that 120 tonnes a year more to bury in the ground.
Indeed. Okay, the festive season is nearly upon us. I'm terrifies me how quickly that's come around. But to finish off then, if I could put to you both, and I'll start with you, Leanne, if you had your Christmas wish list for your, you know, what are you hoping for in the year ahead for Helping Hands and your other projects? You know, what are you thinking about at this time of year? Because I also know you have a lot of demand coming your way as we go into the winter season, and it is a genuine helping hand you're providing to so many.
I've said we don't ask for money, but we are in a place where we are in recovery from the effects of COVID. And yet the demand and the people that we're seeing come through our door is increasing day by day. And you mentioned you're seeing an increase. We've seen a 30% increase in our charity shop, because I think people are accessing charity shops because of the cost of living. So we're seeing the effects of the cost of living already. We're getting people, more and more people coming to our soup kitchen and accessing our services. So of course we need funding. We need people to come and partner with us and become individual givers. Give us £5 a month for Christmas, instead of buying a Christmas card this year. Yeah. By, you know, sign up to be a £5 a month giver. That's a...
And then you get the gift aid on top, of course.
And then we'll get gift aid on top. So we are looking for, if I'm being honest, more individual givers that can become our regular. It helps us, you know, it helps us plan for the year ahead when you've got that individual giving.
Okay, now while I've got you on that, I mean, it's better to put a coffee a month in funding terms into your hands than possibly to go and give money to someone on the street, surely. I mean, I remember we talked privately about this, but can you share with us what the issue is? Because I always feel so... It's so cold out there sometimes. I think, well, what's the best thing I can do when I come across someone?
It's controversial, and I will never say to anyone, it's a personal choice, isn't it?
Of course.
As an organisation, we don't recommend that you give money. Okay. We have had a chap that we work for, several of them, but this particular guy said he earned, you're going to be shocked, £400 in one day.
Gosh. £400 in Leamington Spa?
Yes.
By begging on the street for one day.
So we know that the people of Leamington Spa are very generous.
They are.
And Warwick and Kenilworth. Yeah. They're very, very generous. So between you can get between £200 and £400 is what we've been told. Mm. Whether that's, you know, it's fabricated, I don't know. Mm. I just don't care. I just think that's ridiculous. Mm. Ridiculous? Because actually they need money, don't they? But actually some of the people that we support have got extreme issues around addiction. I'm not saying everybody has.
No.
What I would do is just say, why don't you give it to the people like Salvation Army, ourselves, and the other services, P3, LWS, because we can support these people well. They don't just need money. It's not the handout, it's the hand up these people need. It's not even the house they need, because if you can get given a property, you can be isolated and alcoholic, you know, with mental health issues, sat on your own in your property. It's not that's the answer. So we say, give it to the local charities that are able to support people in a better way.
In a holistic way and deal with the core of the issue.
That wraparound support that they need.
Yeah. So if I'm going shopping in town this winter, which I will be this Christmas, usually late.
Yeah.
last
Boxing
one
day
in.
Shopping.
Yeah, nearly. but it's much better when I'm seeing someone there to actually remember that giving them money is probably the
Pay for a £200 a night soup kitchen.
Yeah,
that will
come on in and
make
get them
hungry and poor, and they come to you.
Well,
and you can
I think it is about making sure they know. I doubt they don't know about Helping Hands, but the money in your hands is going to do an enormous amount more good and really get to where the problem's seated.
And I think the money does genuinely go towards you know, the actual people. So, and it, you know, it's not just us. There's a whole range of other services doing it and helping the homeless people, but we all do different things well.
Yeah. I know as a council we're doing a lot of work around the cost of living and how we as a council can directly support communities at all stages. It's not just those that are coming through for the soup kitchen or visiting the charity shops. This winter is going to be a really challenging time. I'm confident, though, as we did with COVID, if we work together, we will actually get through it and we'll be fine on the other side. But we do need to really be focused about that.
And there's all these wonderful warm hubs that are getting set up. We've got a warm hub.
You got a warm hub there? Okay.
We've got a cold hub.
You've
got a cold hub. It's for men.
Got a little bit of heat. come and have a coffee with us. We're only up the other street.
Yeah, there's a thought. Now, Martin, for you, Action 21, Christmas coming, the year ahead, what's on your wish list? What are you thinking about?
The wish list is one that Action 21 has had for a while now, and that is to get security of premises.
Right.
Because if we had security of premises, we would be able to plan to do more things.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we've mentioned a bit of the history of the organisation. It has moved from one set of derelict premises to another one.
You feel a bit nomadic.
You have this time of settling in and finding out how the finance is going to balance when you move from one to the other. And then just when we got things balanced where we are now, COVID came in, which turned everything on its head.
It did.
Now that we have got things straightened up again after COVID, we now find that there is this threat of the security of the building. So at the moment, we are concentrating mainly on where are we going to go to, what are we going to do, rather than what other things can we broaden out into. It's almost survival of what we've got. And our biggest wish is to be in a building where there wasn't a threat of losing the premises. And we could actually start then saying we've got some spare cash. So we're going to
you
do
can
this.
Focus and develop and build.
We should collaborate on the building.
Isn't there an interesting opportunity there? Well, look, guys, thank you. Thank you for coming into the Local Point today. It's been lovely to see you, Martin and Leanne, again, both of you. I can't believe the time's passed so quickly. And I've got to say, good luck for the winter ahead and for all your great work that you're doing. You add so much to this town and to our community.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. It's been great having you join our conversations today. Please share any comments or pose questions for future episodes by email to localpoint@icloud.com. Thanks for joining us.